T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage.
Engage. Kirk Enterprise, Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage. Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Failing frequencies open, sir.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Did I say Star Tread?
Yeah, maybe redo that one.
No, let's keep it.
Star Tread.
Star Tread, the Nebs generation. Star Tread, Fleep Space Nine. Star Tread, Discovery. Listen, it's called Star Trek. People call it Star Trek sometimes. That drives me crazy. Welcome to another episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. And I am here. My name is Jordan Hoffman. We got Brian here. We are ready to speak to you, the Star Trek fans. We are only a week and a few days away from the first episode of Discovery, and it's an exciting time speaking to you.
Doesn't Uhura open a channel to all decks?
That's how I feel. I feel like I'm in the middle of it all. I'm in the captain's seat speaking to you. It's very exciting. And we have a special guest coming up. Wait, we already did a big talk up for him when we recorded this a few hours ago.
Oh, yeah. We don't need to do an intro.
No. This was good. Brian, let's go to the next intro. You ready? Go play the theme music again.
Space.
Here, let's all listen to it together.
The final frontier.
Let's sing along.
These are the voyages.
If you're listening to this show, I want you to know that this has been a very long day.
To explore.
Brian and I have been here all afternoon. And
engage.
Oh, that's the guy.
Oh, this is the old intro. I never updated this one.
We haven't heard this in a while.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Oh, yes, that's right. This is the old intro.
Your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
All right. You know, this brings up a good point.
I suddenly have some more energy.
I know. This is a good intro. Whoever made it. Did you make this?
No, I didn't make it.
Seth made it.
No, Andy made it. Andy is our production
wizard. I know
wizard.
That. The guy, he's the bald guy, right?
No. He sits in a little cave over there doesn't come out and talk to anybody, but he's just magic in there.
Okay. You know what we're going to have to do in just a few weeks? We might have to
We might have to
adjust the intro.
But who do we add? Do we add just Captain Lorca?
It's going to be Michael. We're going to have audio of Sonequa Martin-Green saying, "I am Lieutenant Michael Burnham," and we're going to have to add that.
Okay, that works.
I hope so. We're going to know soon. All right, cool. So you know what, Brian? We've now introed the intro, and let's go to the next intro. You should keep all that. Very meta. It's like a Monty Python episode.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
And we are back. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. T-minus a week. Until the debut, finally, of Discovery, very soon. We are recording this a little bit in advance because our special guest today, who we're going to beam in a moment, was on the set of Discovery. And you might say, well, so what? A lot of people are on the set. You know, you got the crew, you got the cast, you got the guy that fills the coffee. He goes to the set. Well, the guy that we're going to talk to today is as big a Star Trek fan as you or I. I mean, he's got his own Star Trek podcast, for God's sakes, Transporter Room 3, which is a remarkable podcast that I've been a guest on. So Scott Kalura is going to come on the show in a little bit. But before we get to that, what's latest in the news? We don't know because we're recording this a couple weeks in advance.
Yes. So the news that happened in next week.
Right. We don't know.
We talked about that.
For all we know, one of the great Star Trek actors said something brilliant but was taken out of context by one of those loser websites that rhymes with Io Shine and got everybody into a tizzy, as they always like to do. And for all we know, that's the big buzz. But we hope that isn't the case. The real big buzz, Brian, is the ice machine isn't working in here.
Yes.
I went to get some water, filled my jug, and I'm like, I would love for this to be cold. Press the ice machine.
Lukewarm.
No,
that's
not
what you get.
Yeah, you get lukewarm water here. But that's just the way it is. So listen, last week's show, we had a fun and overmodulated chat with Rene Aubergenois. And prior to that, we spoke with our friend Tim Russ. But today we've got Scott Kalura, who has been in the trenches of nerd journalism for over a decade. He's not listening right now, Brian, so I can talk to you face to face, man to man. Scott Kalura is one of the greatest people. He is one of the greatest and most honorable and forthright men out there.
Well, now I'm even more excited to hear from him.
And this guy's a nerd. I mean, he's a real nerd. He is hardcore, and he's breeding. He has a young child who he's breeding and grooming in his image. The guy, he takes him to all the nerd movies and quizzes him after about Thor and Spider-Man. It's fantastic.
Well, I'll be doing this with my own son soon enough, so
I know. I
mean, maybe I'll have some competition.
How old? He's like around two, your young lad, right?
A year and a half, so yeah.
Yeah, pretty close to two. All right, so you can maybe later you and Scott can talk business. So you know what? Let's beam him in. Scott Kalura of IGN.com, the great IGN, where he's been since you know how long he's been at IGN?
I do not.
Since they've been EGN. That's
oh,
how long.
Wow.
So let's beam him in. We don't have we're in the battle station today, so we don't have our live sound effects. But let's pretend we added in the sound effect, and we just heard the beaming in. And Scott Kalura, you're here. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Jordan and Brian.
Scott, how long have I known you?
Gosh, I don't know. That's a good question. It's got to be at least back to before the Federation Cardassian War, I guess.
That's right.
I don't know, Jordan. At least a decade?
It's probably been close to 10 years. We, you know, neither of us are Tholians, so we don't keep time that closely. But you are indeed one of the remarkable Star Trek fans, and you have been working for IGN.com for a great long time.
Yes.
Yep. And you've done a lot of great stuff over there. You've if anybody listening has ever pressed play on any of IGN's videos, like you know, you think you know the X-Men, or you know, get to know the X-Men, and then you get knowledge dropped on you of deep cuts. That's your baby, right?
Well, thank you. Yes, very much. I did something over there called Comics History 101, which was super popular, where we would delve into all the details and geeky nerdiness of the history of various comics, and I've done something called the Ever series, where we will like list every single member of the X-Men, or it's like a visual infographic video series. So I've done a bunch of stuff like that, but of course the Star Trek coverage is what's really near and dear to my heart.
Absolutely, yeah. And your love of Trek began as a kid, right? I mean,
sure. I think, you know, being from New York as you are, I remember watching it on the local WPIX stations in syndication. You'd have to wait up till midnight to catch it in like high school, followed by the 1 a.m. showing of Twilight Zone. I think it might have been a twofer. You'd get Twilight Zone at 1 a.m. and 1:30 a.m. And yeah, that's kind of where it began, and it was just the you know, perfect time to become a fan, because it was when the movies were starting to, I think it was maybe, you know, circa like Search for Spock and Voyage Home were hitting theaters at that time, and then a couple of years after that, Next Generation debuted when I was in college, and it was like, wow, you know, it was like a golden age. So
yeah,
that's where it all
began. You know,
began.
A lot of people think of college as a golden age of like dating and
not for me.
It was a golden age of watching The Next Generation.
Well, it depends. Are you talking about visualizing dating Deanna Troi, or are you talking about actual dating?
Okay, you're right. I take it all back. Yeah, no, those midnight shows of original series. I mean, that was I've talked about this on the show before. It was 11, is you know, midnight on Channel 11, WPIX.
Yep.
And you know, I was also really into David Letterman. You know, he was a pioneer in comedy that, you know, sure, back then, and really ahead of his time. And he would come on at 12:30. And so it was always the thing. You'd put on, first of all, I wasn't supposed to be up that late anyway. But, you know, I'd sneak into the guest room and watch the little TV in there and start watching Trek at midnight. And then at 12:27, I'd be like, oh boy, Letterman's going to start. What do I do? Like, where do my interests lie? Is it in cutting edge comedy, or is it in this episode? And if it was, you know, Arena or something like that, obviously I'm staying with Trek. But if it was the alternative factor, you know, maybe I would switch over and watch Terry Garr on The Late Show with David Letterman with, you know, with Robert Cray as the musical guest or whoever it was. These were the issues that we had back. We didn't have the TiVo. We didn't have DVR. I guess I could have videotaped it, but who did that, right?
Well, the videotaping was even complicated back then. Like, if you didn't have, like, the quite the right setup, you'd have to, like, leave it on the channel while you were recording, or the clock was blinking 12 on the VCR.
Right. Well, you know, these are the challenges that today's audiences are not going to face. Because, right, and listen to this segue, the people at All Access are going to love me. Because now the newest iteration of Star Trek, called Discovery, in case people listening don't know, is going to be streamable. And if you want to watch it the moment it's first available, God bless. But if you are late, I mean, I'm watching Twin Peaks right now, and I'm loving it. We try to watch it on Sundays, but it's Sundays at 8 o'clock. I'm sometimes not home.
Yep.
It's all right. We get home at 8:42. We watch Twin Peaks then. You know, we watch whenever the heck we want. Yep. Sometimes we're late a day or so. That's the way it works these days. So that's how it's going to be with Discovery, which is awesome, and streaming is great. And I'm leading to the big question is, I wonder if you know a little bit more about Discovery than I do, because you were up in Toronto visiting the set with your IGN hat on. And I was invited, because I'm great, but I was unable to attend because I'm a loser. So I was not able to make it happen for reasons that will haunt me to my grave. I hope at some point I'm able to visit the set. Maybe it's season 4 I will, but for now I didn't go. So you got to tell me from a fan perspective, and you've been to a lot of sets. You know, you've been covering movies and TV for IGN for a long, long time. You've been to sets probably at the same stage in Toronto. Have you been to that one before?
Yep, I've been up there, sure.
What have you seen up there? Resident Evil 3 and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think some Resident Evil stuff I've seen up there. I want to say that I saw the original, the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead was shooting up there, if memory serves. We're going back quite a ways now. That was definitely in Toronto. I think it was up on those sound stages at Pinewood.
I think, is that where they did also that awful Total Recall remake?
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah. I went to that set. It was a great set. A terrible movie, but the set was cool. All right, so you go, you get off the plane, you go to Toronto, they pick you up in the car, they say, all right, Mr. Press, welcome to the set of Discovery. You open the door and you say...
I say, wow. I couldn't even manage to summon a Star Trek quote in the moment because I was so impressed by what I saw. These sets are something else. They really are. And like you say, I've been on the helicarrier from the Avengers. I've been on, like, you know, super scientific headquarters for Godzilla. I've been on all kinds of crazy sets, but the sets for Discovery are really, really impressive. I mean, I stood on the bridge of the Discovery, and it's just you feel like you are on a starship. It's just really impressive. And my one regret about the visit is that I just didn't have the time to fully take in every, like, kind of nook and cranny and every little detail, because they're kind of, we had, you know, relatively limited time because, of course, they're working sets and they have a schedule to keep. But just to give you an example of the level of detail on these things, like on the bridge of the Discovery, I was walking around from station to station, and you know, we've all seen stills from the show, and we've seen the trailers, but to really go around and look at each station, it's like they've just really thought it all through. You know, there's like the behind the captain's chair, there's a communications station, kind of like a Horrors back in the day, and there's a engineering station, and there's a, I think it was a tactical station, and one for the drive, actually, like the engines, which was separate from engineering, which was a kind of a question I had that I couldn't get answered. Why would the drive section be separate from engineering? But then you go in the back of the bridge, there's a door, and you go through it, and it's Captain Lorca's ready room, kind of like Picard had his ready room,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
But Lorca, being a sort of man of action in a time of war, I guess, he has the stand-up style desk. You know those... You know the people nowadays who, they don't sit when they go to work. They stand at their desk.
Yeah, now, you know, Brian's like that.
Okay.
I actually sit at my stand desk now because I just stopped one day.
But you've had a stand-up desk forever.
I have, but I've been sitting for like the last 3 months, so.
The Klingons have defeated you.
Yes, they have.
Oh, man. So he's got a stand-up desk. That's
he has a stand-up desk, and there's which is cool. I think it kind of says something about his character, perhaps.
Yeah.
And in his ready room, there's this huge tactical map of what's going on, because there's essentially, as we know, there's a war going right now between the Klingons and the Federation. And I took a look at the map, and it's just the level of detail, they're naming all sorts of planets from canon, like Roropenthae was on the map,
yes,
and Galarndon Kor, and Sherman's Planet, which I believe Sherman's Planet was from Trouble with Tribbles.
No, that was... Yes, that was. Sherman's Planet was Trouble with Tribbles. You're right. Wrigley's Pleasure Planet was from The Man Trap.
Right. And that might have been there, too. I didn't have time to, like, I wanted to stand there with my notepad and write down every detail, and I didn't really have time.
Oh, man.
Notably, on Sherman's Planet appears to have been occupied by the Klingons during this time period. Which, you know, might tie into why the Tribbles hate the Klingons.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, eventually.
Sure.
But that's sort of the level of detail that you're dealing with. This is stuff that probably will never make it to the screen. It's what used to be a cudograms, right?
Right.
In the Next Generation era, little details that are just kind of there to flesh out the bigger sense of reality on the set. But everything, you know, there's so many actual references that made sense in the context of. It wasn't like they just threw any old planets in there. It's like, oh well, Roropenthae is on the border, the Klingon prison planet,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, well, why not? You know, I mean, they have the opportunity. You're right. I mean, you would have to probably have a 70-inch television and very good resolution to hit pause to catch it. But you know, if somebody's got to write something there, I mean, it's very easy to look this sort of information up. You know, I mean, why not just do it? It just shows a level of, you know, graciousness, I suppose, to the fan. And to the legacy to put things like Roropenthae and in there.
And then at the tactical station, I was looking at the map there, and I was looking for the Enterprise to see if it was anywhere. I did find that the Enterprise is out there.
Yes.
As we know, it is, but I was able to confirm it. And I have to say, there was one kind of annoying error there, which is, again, this will never be on camera, but it was listed as the Enterprise A. And I was like...
take a note. Well, let's wait and see. Maybe there is an Enterprise A that we don't know about.
Could be. Could be a time displaced Enterprise A, maybe. It could be. Who knows?
I'd like to think that. Well, that's cool. So you hit the bridge of the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And we've sort of seen sort of what that looks like in some of the imagery that's come out already. You saw Lorca's ready room. What I read, there was an article in Variety that explained that they've taken over such huge sections of this tremendous soundstage that they have all these corridors on there where you can really feel like you're getting lost walking through.
Did you walk through those corridors? We went for a walk through the corridors, and
taking you on this tour? Was it one of the producers, or was it like a?
It was Aaron Harbart, who's the show, the co-showrunner.
Yeah,
with Gretchen Berg. It was just Aaron that day who was on set, and so he took us for a tour, and he was talking us through everything, which was great. You know, he's a great salesman for the show. If you have any doubts about it, I think you just need to listen to what he has to say, because he really seems to get it, and he's so attuned to every little detail. And, you know, he's the showrunner. He's essentially a writer, producer, right? But he's talking about all the little technical details and things that, you know, very often would just be more the purview of production design and people like that. But he seems to be on top of all of those aspects as well. So he took us for a walk through the corridors. And in the corridors especially, you feel like you're on the Starship because there's not even any windows to kind of betray that there's not an actual star field outside.
Yeah.
Interestingly, apparently the corridors you do double duty as the Discovery corridors, and then they're redressed to also be the Shenzhou corridors.
Yes. Okay.
As well.
The Shenzhou, which is the ship that Captain Giorgio is the captain of before Michael Burnham ends up on the Discovery for reasons that we can only hint at now, having not seen the show, but, you know.
Right, yeah. I don't know much. They weren't giving plot details or spoilers away, and that's not what we're here to talk about anyway.
Yeah, we want to wait till we see the show.
Yeah, so I don't want to be spoiled on it. But the Shenzhou, it does, in fact, exist as a set. And I wasn't able, we didn't go on the bridge of the Shenzhou, but it's still there. And what's interesting about the bridge of the Shenzhou is that it's been constructed so it's sort of hanging from the ceiling in a way, but it's supposed to be a bridge that on the underside of the vessel. Like usually we think of the bridges as being on top of the saucer section, right?
Right.
In this case, the Shenzhou's bridge is actually on the underside of the saucer section.
Well, that's sort of like what the Reliant is like, right? A little bit, isn't it sort of upside
down? Is the Reliant on the underside?
Kinda. Well, I don't know, but it's not on the underside, but the nacelles are kind of in the wrong place.
Right. Yeah, the nacelles kind of are, but in this case, it's the bridge that is. So
no, never. I don't think any Federation ship of merit of note has had sort of a hanging bridge.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so. None of the major ones that we've seen. So that was interesting, and it was really constructed in such a manner. We stood just outside the set of that one. We didn't go up into it, but that you could actually see the shape of it and the huge windows and everything. And then we walked over to the transporter room, and
nice.
That's another set that doubles for Discovery and Shenzhou, so they'll redress it depending on which ship they're supposed to be on. So I got to stand on the transporter and get my picture taken.
Nice.
And that was a real highlight. And one of the things about all these sets as well is that they really... All the graph. If you think about like sort of the Next Gen and Deep Space Nine and those shows, everything was very touch paddy kind of, right? The
yes.
consoles.
Mm-hmm.
These sets have working buttons. I kind of snuck and clicked a couple of buttons when no one was looking.
Great.
And
ruined it for everybody now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Can you cut that part out?
Yeah.
And there's like sliding dials and all kinda, kinds of
so it's a
like
little
that.
It's a little bit halfway between the style of TOS and TNG. Then,
yeah, it is. Yeah. What the producer kept talking about was also Star Trek Enterprise, which I don't think we have talked much about that in the press in general, but the influence of Enterprise is definitely coming into play here as well. But
the color scheme of the ship is very Enterprise.
Yeah.
You know,
the uniforms as well sort of call back to the blue jumpsuits of Enterprise, right?
Yeah. No, I love the new uniforms because they do have a similar to the Enterprise uniforms, but they are more, you know, they're more Star Trek-y. I mean, yes, they're not the bright primary colors of the velour of 1966, but that would be ridiculous. And
right.
It's a nice blend. I wanted to ask you, though, when you're on the bridge, was there, or did they tell you, or were there like spots where they said, oh, this is where a green screen will be, or this is where we'll incorporate CGI into the mechanics of the ship, into the dials and buttons and whatnot? Because I think there'll be a little bit of that.
Yeah, I think there will be. They didn't get too much into that. The view screen itself is going to be CG, as I understand it. So there is green screen beyond that most of the time.
Yeah.
And for the Shenzhou Bridge as well, there was a huge green screen on the outside of it to fill in the view screen or the window, depending on the case. And in Captain Lorca's ready room, the window behind him as well, I believe there was a green screen outside the window for the star. I'm assuming for the starfield effect, whether you're traveling at warp or stationary starfield. So there's definitely some of that, but I didn't see, in terms of the bridge itself, they didn't go into any details about, you mean like filling in computer displays or something
like
that?
Yeah, like, you know, to sort of, computer filling in, or like having like a hologram pop up or anything like
right.
that.
Right. Everything looked, everything looked highly functional in terms, because like when you would go up to the display, as I said, there were star maps and things, but then there would also be like at like Lieutenant Saru's station, there was like a readout on some kind of alien vessel. I don't know what it was, but it was a sort of three-dimensional computer graphic of the vessel and all the details about it. So they're putting so much detail into that stuff. I would think that that's meant to be camera friendly, at least from the kind of aside from going in for extreme close-ups of the console. Where maybe they'll add things, but a lot of it is just ready to be shot as is, I think.
So other than the corridors, transporter rooms, the bridge, the ready room, the exterior of the Shenzhou Bridge, did you make your way to one of the Klingon ships?
We actually did not see a Klingon ship. Oh. We did not.
They were cloaked.
Which was disappointing. I will say that there was a set I'm not allowed to talk about, unfortunately, that we kind of stumbled upon, which is they were filming episode 12 the day we were there.
Uh-huh.
So pretty late in the season, and they asked that we just not talk about it, but it's a little spoilery. And,
right. Even if it was like an accident, and he was like, oh, what's behind this door? No! And then they just signed an NDA.
We were in the costume department, and there was a bunch of designs hanging on the wall that we saw that maybe they would have preferred we hadn't seen.
All right, so somebody goofed and forgot to put something away that the press shouldn't have seen.
And so then at that point, I think they were like, we can let them see this set, but since they can't talk about this stuff anyway. But
okay. When we get to episode 12, we're going to have you back on the show to talk about it.
Okay, yeah. And I would say, while we're on the topic of the costumes, I did actually see some of the early physical costumes they made, which were the old gold, blue, and red tunic style, that were sort of test costumes they experimented, of course. You know how these things work with big Hollywood productions. They do a million versions of a thing before they finalize it. And at one point, they did have gold, blue, and red tunics, which called back to the original series suits. But they also felt to me sort of like the Cage era, like there's something about the fabric and the collars on them reminded me a bit of the Cage era.
Yeah, well, the Cage era had like thicker, kind of fatter collars, ridged almost. Yeah,
right, exactly. And so they were definitely, and there were a couple, they had a couple of versions of them that were slightly, one was a brighter colored set and then a more toned down version.
Yeah.
So they definitely played with that idea and they ultimately decided not to go in that direction.
What do you think? What did they make the right choice? Are the new
it's
ones?
It's a tough, it's a tough call because like they had the final costumes laid out on mannequins right there for us and they looked so beautiful and finished.
Yeah.
And then the colored versions that didn't make the final cut were just hanging on hangers and they weren't really finished.
Look at this junk over here. You know, we didn't choose that. No, right, I get it. I mean, right. I sort of have mixed feelings myself. I've now that the images have been in the out there for so long, and I saw the costumes in Las Vegas at the display that CBS put together. They do look really great, and I especially love the medical uniform.
Yeah, the all white uniform.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's really nice. So the thing is about the really nerdy guy inside who lives deep inside me, he's worried about things like that. Well, why doesn't, why don't they match up with the Cage era costumes? Or why isn't the tech exactly the same? But, at the same time, this is a big production. It's the year 2017, right?
Yeah.
Well, you have to, not only do you have to differentiate from what's come before, but you also have to acknowledge the advances in technology over the past 50 years. So I understand why they're doing this. And they're trying to make it their own thing, right?
Make it their own thing. And also the changes in television. You can't have it look like, if it looked like when Scotty went to the holodeck in Relics to recreate the 66 set, it would be a joke. It would be laughed. It would be laughed out. I mean, the show The Orville, which I haven't seen yet either. Maybe by the time this airs, I'll have seen it. which is Seth MacFarlane basically recreating The Next Generation.
Yeah.
That set does look like a joke, but the Orville's a comedy, you
right,
know,
exactly.
And that's okay.
Exactly.
So,
yep, exactly.
You know, so, they got, and to some, but you're right, you know, and I've been struggling. Well, struggling is the wrong word. I've been tussling with this also myself. And I think the thing is this, for the fans that really just can't make the connection, that just want it to be like old TOS, there are scores and scores of novels set in that era that are waiting for you to read on the shelves of your local bookstore and library that are set in the Cage era, in TOS era, that have those old characters. And no, it's not the same as watching it on TV. There's no season four of the original series, but, you know, there is stuff out there, you know, and it's,
yep.
You gotta, if you want to play in that sandbox some more, there's so much of that material out there in another form. So,
yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah. You know, and but at the same time, the producers and the cast have all said that they are sticking to canon in terms of the stories themselves and the characters and the plot. So it's not like they're ignoring what has come before either.
No.
So,
and, you know, we did the panel in Las Vegas about, and it's recorded and you can listen to it on this podcast. You can go back a few weeks where we interviewed David Mack, who was writing the book for the Discovery prequel, which will be in stores the week of the Discovery premiere, which more than anything else is going to tie things into canon in ways that I think will delight
yeah.
fans tremendously. And I know it's
yeah.
not the same, but it's also a nice add-on. So,
yeah.
So now we've. So was there anything else that you saw? Any other rooms that you saw that you can talk about?
Yeah, there
about,
were a
or?
Couple of. There were. I was on the engineering set also, and that was pretty cool. It's there's a whole section sort of in the back of the engineering which is devoted to Lieutenant Stamets' like mushroom and fungus collection.
Oh, sweet! Did you see any of those?
And that. So there's something. And again, they were being kind of mysterious about the details here, but. Essentially, Lieutenant Stamets, that somehow his research into mushrooms and fungus is somehow tied into engineering, and it's an important aspect of the show. That's all I.
He's gonna find a mushroom that's gonna like zap him into a wormhole or something. Like that. So
that's happened before. Many people have experienced that. With
that's
mushrooms.
Right. At a Grateful Dead concert. Have you when you were in engineering? Did they have like a wire fence that's like Scotty would hang on to when the photon torpedoes were
no,
firing?
I did
no?
not see a wire fence, actually.
Oh,
unfortunately, that would have been great, actually.
Was there a forced perspective painting
no.
in the back? No, it's
no,
all legit.
They just had, okay. It was essentially a closed chamber, which was supposed to indicate where the actual warp drive was beyond that, sort of.
Okay.
But it's not. There's not a forced perspective aspect
all
to
right.
it.
Did it glow? Was there like clearly like that's the chamber? Or woom, woom,
it wasn't.
Woom, woom.
It wasn't glowing while I was there, but it may be okay. when they're shooting, it'll glow.
I certainly hope so.
I also saw. I saw a bunch of stuff. I just want to run through anything else I missed real quick. Outside the transporter room, there were like lockers with environmental suits
oh.
or like EVA suits, I guess. Which I thought made a ton of sense. Like, of course you should have your spacesuit ready to go in the transporter room, you know, because you're not always going to beam down to that friendly
no,
planet.
No, you're going to be on an asteroid or something like that.
Right,
yeah.
So I thought that was cool. And we also saw an airlock set, which again had an EVA suit aspect to it. But there's a big door that opens to an exterior airlock. And then there's also a platform, which is sort of like a circular elevator without doors, I guess, which rises up and will take a crew member up to outside to the hull of the ship. So the way they explained it, I sort of was picturing, do you recall Star Trek, the motion picture when they exit to go visit V'ger, they kind of just are suddenly standing on the saucer section.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I think it's that kind of a situation there.
Yeah, no, and that is like that would be handy. It's like, I got to get to the hull, you know, I just
right.
Get me up there.
Get me up there,
so,
yeah.
So listen, you know, we don't have too much time left because you're a busy man, but who did you talk to? Who did you meet? We know you met Aaron Harbert. Did you meet Lieutenant Saru?
Much.
Did you meet... what's his name? Doug Jones?
Yep. I spoke to Doug Jones. I spoke to pretty much everybody. really. Most of the main cast, I spoke to Sonequa Martin-Green, I spoke to Michelle Yeoh, I spoke to Jason Isaacs, they're all so excited about this project. It's sort of contagious. Like, just talking to them, and, you know, you never know. Like, I've been on set visits before where everyone's so excited about the project, and it looks great, and then you see the final product, and it doesn't quite come together. So you never know, but they seem really so into this project, and they really seem to get what Star Trek is all about. Like, they're not trying to make an action adventure thing with lasers and stuff. They're trying to. Sure, there will be action and lasers in it, or phasers rather, but they really seem to get the idea of what Star Trek is supposed to be about. Yeah. And I spoke to them a bit about the idea of portraying war on Star Trek, which could be, you know, a controversial idea. I know, of course, we've seen war before on Star Trek. Deep Space Nine did its whole thing.
Deep Space Nine has always been the different show.
Right.
And
yeah.
It was also at a time when if you didn't like Deep Space Nine, you can go watch Voyager.
Right, exactly. And Harbert was like, he was pretty, you know, frank about it. He was like, yeah, you know, it is kind of a different thing for us to do this. But his take on it is the Federation does not become the Federation without going through things like this. And he said that a lot of the characters even asked the same question on the show, which is, you know, Discovery is meant to be a science vessel. Like, this was not the mission we thought we were heading out on, to be involved in a war and to be soldiers. We're scientists, and Stamets, for example, is often concerned with the fact that his research is being used in the service of war. So there's a lot of Star Trek-y kind of ideas being applied to this concept of war within Starfleet. And I think I get the feeling talking to them that one of the big questions at the heart of this season of the show will be, how does Starfleet not just fight a war, but how does Starfleet end a war without becoming that which it's fighting, right? How does it find peace without having to wipe out its enemies?
Whoa.
So there's some cool concepts going on there. And of course,
and topical concepts also.
Very topical concepts. And I think the same question is going to come up for the Klingons as well. I don't think the Klingons are being portrayed as just straight up warmongers here. Right?
Did you meet the actors playing the Klingons?
I only met one of the actors playing a Klingon. I'm trying to remember her name right now.
Mary Chifo?
Mary Chifo,
yes.
Yeah.
And she's awesome. I hung out with her in Las Vegas. She's a riot.
Yeah, she's really cool, isn't she?
Well, she is, you know, a relative newcomer. I mean, she's very young, and she is a, you know, trained actor. She went to Juilliard, you know, so she knows her stuff.
Yep.
And she has really taken this role and put her all into it. And, you know, I joked with her. I'm like, playing Klingon. I'm like, oh, you speak. So I'm like, and I know that you're speaking Klingon on set, and there's a Klingon language expert there. And she goes, yes, I'm not fluent, but I can read it. And I'm like, I'm kind of joking with you, but that's awesome.
She's really into it. She was name-dropping. She name-dropped Kalar.
Awesome.
Belana Torres. Like, she was like, she knew what she was talking about. The Doras sisters. But I spoke to her about the idea of Klingon glass ceiling. Is there a glass ceiling in the Klingon, within the Klingon Empire?
Well,
and she has some thoughts about that, for sure.
I mean, the Doras sisters would say no, but you know, who knows?
Yeah, well, I don't know, though. I mean, the Doras sisters did have to sit by and let their idiot brother kind of run things at first, though, right?
I guess you're right, yeah. Well, you know, it's great because she already is like, she's in this one. You know, some actors don't know, or maybe don't quite recognize what they're getting into when they take a Star Trek role.
Yeah.
And some actors do and are really excited. Like, from the new movies cast, Carl Urban from day one was like, I'm your guy, you know, and he loves it. And he goes to the conventions and he is a fan, which is not to say the others aren't, but, you know, Chris Pine has yet to go to a convention, you know?
Right.
Mary Chifo was mixing it up with the fans and they already were digging her, and they haven't even seen her she doesn't even have a line in the trailer.
Right.
But, you know, they were digging her, and she's like, I am the woman Klingon you are all going to love. So It's pretty exciting. So she's somebody that I got my eye on. I have yet to meet Soniqua. She seems wonderful in every interview I've seen. Tell me a little bit about your time with her.
She's terrific, yeah. So I had actually spoken to her at San Diego Comic-Con in July as well. That was the first time I got to talk to her about Star Trek. And she is another one who just has seems to have really immersed herself in it. She's been pouring through, watching the I think she immediately jumped in and went and watched all the original series, and I think plans on working her way through everything eventually. And she is just like super excited about this, but again, really seems to get it. I spoke to her about the idea of being Spock's, you know, stepsister, I guess, or adopted sister. And I spoke to her about Amanda as well, which, you know, we've heard a little bit about her relationship with Sarek and how she has adopted some sort of Vulcan ideas in her as an adult and in her career and in her life. And that even though she's a human, she approaches a lot of things as a Vulcan. But I spoke to her about Amanda as well, Spock's mom, Sarek's wife. And she said that we will see that as well. We will see how the very human woman, Amanda, has also informed Michael Burnham and how she's another one of her mentors. In addition to that, she wouldn't... I had to ask her the question I knew she wouldn't answer, which was, do we get to see Spock as a child or anything like that? And she wouldn't answer it, but she also wouldn't come out and say no. She just said, stay tuned. So
that's a good we'll answer. See. I like that. I like that.
I think there might be some aspect of us seeing some flashbacks in this show. Like, we might revisit her childhood on Vulcan at certain points. I don't know that for sure. Again, it's kind of a feeling I got. But so that leaves open the room to, like, you don't have to bring in Zachary Quinto or someone to play an adult Spock. But you could have glimpses of a young Spock under those circumstances, couldn't
right.
you?
I mean, from what I understand is that Burnham is a little older than Spock.
I don't know. Have you heard that?
I have. Maybe I'm not supposed to say that. I don't know.
Jordan,
you know,
don't
I don't know what I've heard.
You're not supposed to say.
I don't know. I've heard, that this is what I have heard. And that there is a prequel novel that's coming out 2 days after the first episode. And a lot of these Michael Burnham's childhood questions are going to be answered.
Okay. All right. Okay.
We can leave that in. We can leave that in, Brian.
Does it make sense that she'd be a bit older anyway? Because if she's already exec officer by the time she's on the Shenzhou, just career-wise, it would seem she's advanced further than Spock would have at that point.
It does.
Right?
It does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, groovy, and I'm trying to think who was like the funniest person you talked to in the cast.
You know, she's really Soniqua is really funny.
Yeah,
actually, yeah, she's really hilarious. Actually, I mean, she's the kind of actor who you feel like she's not just being an actor when you're interviewing her. Like, she's not just saying what needs to be said.
Yeah,
she seems like the kind of person you'd want to go down to the hotel bar with and like
awesome.
Have a few beers with.
Yeah.
And of course Doug Jones, who I'm sure you've met many times, is, you know, he's the makeup impresario from Guillermo del Toro's many movies, and he's plays Lieutenant Sarrow here. He's just a pleasure to hang out with as well.
Did you meet the woman who plays the young Ensign Tilly or whatever her name is? Ensign?
I met her at Comic-Con. She wasn't there the day I was on set.
What is the character's name? It's not Ensign Tilly. It's Ensign...
It's Ensign... I think it is Ensign Tilly,
is
no?
it? Ensign Smiley? I don't know. She's like a little redhead girl, you know.
Ensign
she's...
Pulver? that's another character that I'm very intrigued by, because we're seeing... It's a little bit of the Lower Decks syndrome,
yes,
right? If you recall the Next Gen episode.
I do. I was talking about it last night at drinks with a friend of mine.
Of course you were. So we're seeing aspects of the ship that we don't usually see on a weekly basis.
Well, I mean, that's what's so cool. Yeah, like Stamets and his friggin' mushrooms. I mean, when we first saw Sulu, he's with the crazy plants.
Right.
And
right.
Janice Rand,
plant,
yeah,
right.
Janice Rand has has his lunch, and I mean that, and then you never really saw Sulu the botanist again. I love that.
Yeah, so yeah. I will say that in general, I get the sense that this is going to have a big ensemble cast beyond the characters we've already learned about, because like just walking around like the makeup department, we saw some designs. Like there's some kind of a synthetic humanoid character who works on the bridge. Apparently she is it, or she, it appeared to be a she, is a featured player who we often see on the bridge of the Discovery. But it's not someone we've seen in any of the marketing or anything yet.
Well, I mean, that's great. I mean,
yeah, so I wonder if
more stuff
down the line where we can start to get to a Deep Space Nine kind of place where, like, you know, the Wyoons and the Nogs and the Garricks all start to get their own storylines and threads.
It always comes to us. So it's always, listen, you know, in 10 days, we'll have the show episode 1 on CBS Prime.
Yep.
And then CBS All Access. I guess the only way we can ensure that we get a season, I think a season 2 is a definite, but the only way we can ensure a season 3 is if we get enough people to shell out a few bars of Gold Press Latinum and get CBS All Access. So, Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show. I've wanted to have you on since day one, and just the stars never quite aligned, but absolutely.
I'm glad that we were able to make it happen finally. You know,
but I
want to
have
off
you
in the Delta Quadrant for a while. So,
want to have you in here in the studio at some point once the show is on the air.
Sure,
I would love to have you come back, and we can really do a deep dive.
Absolutely.
Once we're in this show that we hopefully love. If we don't love it, I guess we got to be honest about it. But for now, all signs point to it being a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Very good. All right, Scott. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.